GrowCFO is where finance leaders grow together. Join thousands of like-minded professionals using GrowCFO to access the combined knowledge and experience of the finance leader community. You can join us today, growcfo.net. Hello and welcome to the GrowCFO show. I'm your host, Kevin Appleby, and I've got Catherine Marks back with me again for part three in the series we've been putting together on scaling FP&A. So, Catherine, you've brought some guests along today. You've brought your old team from Virgin Media O2 to talk to us.
I have indeed. It's good to be reunited for this podcast. So thanks for having us on, Kevin. Yep. Shall I perhaps do a brief round of intro for the team?
Introduce the team, please.
So first up, we have Ed Danan. So Ed is now CFO at Boneus, which is a rapidly growing ultra-fast broadband operator with an active M&A agenda. Before that, Ed was an FP&A director with Virgin Media and Walgreens Boots. He's been working as a finance professional for over 25 years and has overseen and executed numerous transactions in both the telecoms and retail sectors. Next up, we have Julie Parker. So Julie is head of finance integration and transformation project office for Virgin Media O2, where she's worked for over a decade in finance transformation. She led on the pre-merger integration planning for finance and procurement, and she has worked in most departments in finance across a range of different industries and scale of companies, including Williams Lee, Tesco, and a small internet startup. And we have Tom Reiter. So Tom is currently Director of Business Partnering for Liberty Global Shared Services. That's one of the parent companies of the Virgin Media O2 joint venture. He started on the Virgin Media Finance Graduate Scheme back in 2012 and worked through a number of roles across finance, primarily with an FP&A slant. So Tom also supported the pre-merger integration planning for finance and reporting, and post-merger, the synergy tracking and reporting, as well as being head of finance for central functions and value capture. So a lot of folks with a lot of knowledge that formed the integration FP&A team for Virgin Media O2.
And this is going to be interesting because I've never recorded a podcast that has four guests on it before. So this is going to keep me on my toes. But anyway, we're clearly talking integration today. But before we get into talking about the integration that you guys went through, bringing O2 and Virgin Media together, Ed, what are your thoughts about what value FP&A can bring to a transaction?
Well, Kevin, if we get anywhere near an integration, I think it's fair to say there's plenty of interesting work for an FP&A professional to get involved in. I'd call out a couple of really rich areas. One is financial planning. So before you embark on a deal of any kind, you need to understand the industrial logic. You need to understand the business model. You need to model those scenarios in a business plan, applying things like synergy assumptions, integration costs into a model. And as part of that, I've seen FP&A professionals and I've used FP&A professionals to advise on business valuation, for example, the price that you would pay for a particular business. So there's a lot of what I would describe as soul-nourishing work for an FP&A professional. The other piece that I think FP&A can really add a lot of value in is comes into analysis. So this is when we call it due diligence. So imagine that you're looking to acquire another company, review the company's forecast, and make an assessment on the level of risk around that forecast. So that really lends itself to some quality analysis from this type of professional.
So after the deal's done, just thinking about your experience, Catherine, in Depop and in Virgin Media O2, what's the most important thing to focus on next for the finance team?
Yeah, great question. And there's a whole lot documented about M&A deals and the large number that fail to deliver on their promises. That first year to 18 months is absolutely critical to a deal's success or failure. The combined organization needs to maintain its core business. So competitors are just waiting for you to take your eye off the ball. Protecting that underlying business is critical. You need to deliver on synergies within the planned integration milestones to capture the deal value. and focus on integration of the two organizations. So realigning with the new strategy, new organization structures, new RACI processes, culture, behaviors, systems, defining all of this and giving people the resources, training, processes and metrics to help them succeed. And I think this stage is really tricky. Those involved with the deal have been running marathons at sprint pace for a while. There's loads of drama going on at the senior levels on who's doing what in the newly merged organization. And then for many people in the organization, it's all new and a very unsettling time. There's loads of practical challenges, which we're going to talk more about today. And even if you planned for it, which may have been limited when we were working together pre-merger, for example, we were operating blind because we weren't allowed to share much, certainly no detailed numbers because of legal restrictions. But I think the overarching point is having a clear strategy for your integration. There's a spectrum of the level of integration ranging from very highly integrated into all systems with a high level of shareholder visibility or much more standalone. And then particularly if it's going to be more of the former, having dedicated leadership from both the parent company and subsidiary working hand in hand and not leaving this to be an after hours add-on. So the leadership and resourcing really needs to align with that overall strategy.
Quite a chaotic, very busy period. I love that analogy of running several marathons a sprint. Yep. But it must have been a really challenging time. So Julie, tell me a little bit more about some of those practical challenges you faced in that first year of integration.
So there's obviously a myriad of challenges and complexities that Catherine mentioned post-merger, but I'm going to focus in on three things that I think may really impacted in FP&A. And the first one of those was balancing speed versus accuracy of getting your results or your budgets done and how to get the right balance in that area. You have to make some quite brave and sometimes big calls as to what takes the focus. Is it getting your numbers in quicker? Is it having them 100% accurate? So we started off reporting to shareholders on working day 16. Obviously, they were not delighted by that, but we managed to get this down to working day 6. But this took a lot of effort of the teams and a lot of time for them, making incremental improvements as we went and focusing in on that critical path to what would get us to that point. But we did have to take some tough calls there. And sometimes materiality calls had to come into play. The second thing I want to call out is about resource availability. As Catherine said, working off the side of the desk is very hard and very challenging. There's so much that needs to be done. So mergers bring in that world of complexity with them and also loads of ad hoc queries and one-off understanding exercises. And balancing this firefighting and the improvements needed to prevent the fires is really key. And that needs senior leadership agreement and aligned objectives for the team as to what to prioritise and some ruthless prioritisation in this area to try and avoid burnout. And it may even need to resource up in this area to enable this. And the third point is around change management. It's super important to brief people on the journey with you. How can you win the hearts and minds to get the required integration activities over the line? Your team's goodwill will only stretch so far. So having a robust change management plan is really key in that area.
Absolutely. I can definitely second that. The change is the biggest challenge in anything like this. But I guess one of the challenges you've got in any sort of merger coming together of multiple teams is every team comes from a different culture. Tom, tell me a little bit about navigating all of those different cultures.
No, absolutely. I think just to set the scene, I think looking back, arguably, this was going to be the single biggest challenge of the JV is around merging two very distinct cultures. Just for context, you're bringing together a company with almost 20,000 permanent staff, two hugely iconic, powerful brands built up over several decades, ultimately. So that loyalty and pride in working for Virgin Media O2 was enormous. I mean, I know from my own personal perspective as a graduate starting at Virgin Media, I felt enormously proud working for that company and the products and services we provided. So it's always going to be an immense challenge to overcome. I think during pre-merger, arguably we were selected because we were a group comfortable working with change, working at pace. So we maybe lulled ourselves into a bit of a self-fulfilling prophecy that we had similar working styles and similar ways of going about things that arguably post-merger, when you got your teeth into things, maybe wasn't ultimately the case. I think it would be fair to say there were several inhibitors that didn't help in terms of merging culture. So one piece around harmonization of roles and teams wasn't really consistent in the offset. Group functions had to come together straight away, whilst more the commercial functions stayed very much, and we'll talk probably more about, you know, being in silos, them and us. Those sort of commercial functions were very distinct as a fixed and mobile business, and that maintained itself for several years post the merger ultimately. I think it does come down a lot to perception and optics, which can be quite difficult to fight. But equally, there are some simple things that could have been done. You had teams coming together, people at the same level that had very different job titles, different contractual terms. Yes, clearly there's financial constraints you have to fight against, but equally that all helps to sort of reinforce that silo impact. Systems and IT, right? So we had nearly 3 years on from the merger, there's still people with two laptops to be able to access Virgin Media or O2 systems. You're recruiting people into Virgin Media or O2 roles. I think it would absolutely be fair to say that even now, there's not what I'd call a Virgin Media O2 contract or role. You're either recruiting someone as a Virgin Media or an O2 employee to this day. And again, that still reinforces that impact. In terms of addressing that, I think there are several things that could have been done, or I'd call out as things that really would be good practice. I talk about cross-pollination, and this is maybe my zoology background coming into things here as well as my degree, but people tended to stay in the roles they were comfortable in, the teams they were comfortable in. There wasn't much mixing or moving about of individuals. And arguably, you could say that could have been forced or engineered more effectively at the offset. I talked about perception and optic, and I'm not going to get into side things like that because it is a very sensitive subject. But that initial selection, that initial leadership team does set the foundation of the org going forward. And certainly, I think there was a perception underlying that maybe it was a bit imbalanced. And thinking about the balance of your team and backgrounds of your team as you're building it up is incredibly important. I sort of take our graduate scheme as a little bit of a microcosm for that. And Julie and I, respective heads of scheme, I was the head of our finance graduate scheme at Virgin Media, Julie head of scheme at O2. We made the decision quite early on that for any new graduates coming in, we were going to make that consolidated, combined feel. So we only signed people to a single contract. We audited and merged a lot of the roles. So we had a broad spectrum of rotations available for graduates on the legacy blue and the legacy red side. So we've really tried to start that cross-pollination process. I think it would be fair to say, though, and we're dealing with people at the end of the day, that we actually saw that same thing that you're probably seeing through the company, that actually graduates tended towards their legacy company. So if you're a legacy O2 graduate, you tended to put your preferences high up for a legacy O2 role. So even at that level, it was really starting to show. I think we also got to bear in mind the two parents as well. So we did have two shareholders as well, taking that 50-50 share. I think they drive the culture as well down into Virgin Media and O2 historically and going forward. It leads to a lot of different questions, different asks coming into the finance team, a lot of inefficiency. But a personal example from one of my roles as the head of central functions was trying to set up the first consolidated bonus and long-term incentive program for Virgin Media O2. Again, dealing with the shareholders, very different attitudes to reward, different decision makers in the companies, one being more finance-led, one being more people and reward team-led, and it led to multiple iterations and modeling. I mean, I used to joke that if I had a pound for every bonus model I'd done in the year, I'd have been able to retire at the end of it, because there was that much difference of opinion and strength of opinion in the room as well. We sort of said you should have had some kind of shareholder liaison role, someone that's there in the center to filter and consolidate a lot of those requests in, which would help again in making that harmonized approach to dealing with those two shareholder questions and queries. So look, in conclusion for me, it's definitely not something to downplay culture. And I think in a finance world, let's not downplay the impact of COVID as well. A lot of this was done virtually, this merger. So it's difficult to build those personal relationships as easily than face-to-face. But maybe we get so focused on those outputs. Let's have day one financials, reporting, controls in place that maybe we forget about there's a people aspect to this as well. And how we do things is as important as getting that output right.
Ed, I can echo so much of that. And I seem to have had a career that's been full of being part of the acquisition or the merger of two businesses. And I think you really do have to understand those two cultures coming together, no matter how similar they seem at face value. I think the two that I really remember, I'd just become a management consultant and joined Coopers & Lybrand when they announced the merger with Price Waterhouse. And two management consultancy businesses, both with professional, big professional services firms. Oh, the culture was very different. And there was always a perception in each area, oh, which firm's taken which firm over? So that you need to watch these things. Then a few years later, PwC sold the consulting business to IBM. And I'm giggling. I'm hearing you talk about legacy red and legacy blue.
Absolutely.
We were light blue. IBM was big blue. The same thing's going on. And there's two hugely different cultures lashed against each other. And this is the biggest single problem you're going to hit. People coming from different places. Nobody likes change. Everybody likes it the way it used to be. They want it the way their company wants it. No, you've got to communicate. Communicate again. Then you think you've communicated enough. Oh, no, you haven't. Communicate again. Catherine, that brings a great question. There's this integration going on. How quickly do you do it? How do you pace this?
So others may disagree with me and raise valid concerns about the scale of change and people's ability to adapt to that. Mm. But in my experience, being in that chaotic state without feeling there's a clear vision and momentum towards building it does more harm than good. I think that people do tolerate more change than we give them credit for. But what starts to be problematic is when there's no aligned vision, no progress, or no communication around that. And then you start to get frustration and a destructive cycle of churn. So some churn is natural in these situations and to a certain extent, a good thing. But there's a tipping point where you lose too much knowledge too fast and struggle to build momentum towards the end goals. So overall, my view is to err on the side of ripping off the Band-Aid. Of course, there's things that it takes time to work through, particularly when you're talking about executive team changes and restructures. And you need to watch out for the interdependencies with other departments. So for example, if you're implementing a parent company finance system and there's an upstream dependency on an HR system, which is not yet implemented, you need to think about those kind of things. But generally, I would say get a joint task force on it. Empower them with what they need, including interim resourcing, and go as fast as you possibly can. So with sensitivity, but definitely speed.
I agree with a lot of that, Catherine. You're there on the receiving end of this. While change, a lot of people don't like, uncertainty, not knowing what's happening, things falling into a void, people like even less. I think you've got to get on and do this stuff. So just thinking about that a little bit more, you're operating in some cases separate systems. You're operating in some cases integrated systems. Julie, what are the important things you need to consider when you're doing that?
So even getting the basics right can be really hard. One of the big blockers is around having a different shape of chart of accounts. So you can't actually just stick your numbers together. So often as you do that, you move to the lesser level of granularity to do so, which can bring with it many challenges. And this needs rapid focus to increase the granularity levels to really get that insight and reporting at the right levels for the business to create the value that it needs as a merged entity. So this works best when it's broken into manageable chunks and focusing on making real node-grade decisions to longer-term system plans. You can't do everything at once. So there's realities of having the money to do what is needed. Systems are not cheap. Things like ERPs are very expensive, very time-consuming to bring in. In an ideal world, you want everyone on the same financial system as quickly as possible. But this just may not be viable with the budget available. So working on the most practical solutions for your organization is really key, whether that's a new ERP, moving onto one of the existing systems, or just creating a combined ledger, bringing those systems together. But whatever you're going to do it as quickly as you possibly can and ensure that everyone is aware of the end goal and the rationale for why we're doing it. But then there's some real basics as well. Tom referenced working on different laptops and this simple thing is like those central teams being able to access the right systems from behind different firewalls. That needs really close collaboration with IT to work through and making sure that finance and IT are really closely engaged and understand the timescale for that change.
Yeah, we've got a lot of stuff going on there, a lot of change going on. A new system, when it's brought in, I've read all sorts of reports about those systems never ever achieving the benefits they're supposed to do. But one of the big things that's going on here in a merger, you bring two organizations together to produce synergies to make a much better single organization than the two separate ones. So you're looking at those synergies in this M&A deal, Tom. How do you go about measuring that value is actually going to be captured?
No, absolutely. I think starting point is baseline, baseline, baseline. I repeat it because it was a word vaunted around a lot during the merger, but I think it needs to be accurate. It needs to be measurable. You absolutely need to know where you're starting from, both financially and operationally, to be able to measure the change going forward. Accountability and ownership as well, incredibly important. You know, Catherine mentioned this heavy turnover, people changing roles, and actually being very clear on your plans, good structure in place, and accountable individuals actually help you overcome when those personnel changes may happen. It's also important that those synergy cases are aligned to the JV structure and strategy. If it's not how you're actually going to run the business going forward, measure or hold the business to account going forward, then it's going to fail that first hurdle. And it's not just about the financials. It's not just about having a strong financial business case. It's about having strong operational metrics as well. A really good set of KPIs with clear milestones linked to those financial values. Again, enable you to track things far more effectively. It's all about getting that baseline. What are you taking something from and what are you taking it to from an operational and financial perspective? And then from a reporting side, you need to make it clear and you need to make it simple. It needs to be clean. It needs to be auditable, but you can't be layering in different levels of savings and efficiencies and other cost reduction programs, other revenue growth programs, and mixing them in with synergies. You need that discreteness as well and simplicity in how you're to sort of executive level and ultimately externally. So these are big, serious numbers that are going out there into the external world. So having that clear reporting, clear baseline, clear ownership and accountability, incredibly important.
And I guess one version of the truth as well. It can obviously be very difficult for two different sets of numbers getting out of the door on this one.
Two different sets of numbers, two different ERPs, charts of accounts to meld it together, which is actually why those operational metrics become even more critical because they're another triangulation point and another sniff test of actually, are we on track? Are we getting it right?
Yeah. Mergers are incredibly unsettling times for people. I remember you mentioned that merger of IBM Consulting with PwC Consulting. I didn't stay around very long because I really did not like the new culture. How do you keep people motivated during
I'll share a secret with you, Kevin. I was also involved in that merger with PW and Coopers & Lybrand. It shows how old I am. That was my very first month of employment and I was straight into a merger, which shows you how these things come around. But yeah, that was unsettling in that it was two companies in the same jurisdiction doing similar things. And naturally, people look at the context of that merger and it's a very difficult place. People can feel very unsettled in that context. For me, it comes down to communication, clear, timely, and most importantly, what I describe as authentic communication. And just touch on what I mean by that. I've worked in a couple of transactions where communication hasn't been authentic. So for example, an executive or a management team has said jobs will be secure and then 6 months down the line gets what? The reality was far from that. Destroy trust and really actually hurt the merger process from that perspective. Also, there's given the uncertainty, I always think it's not unfair if people ask a question, say, I don't know, but you take them through the process and the timeline for when you will know the answer. And that comes back to that timely point. So I think making sure that people are heard through the change process, making sure there's that two-way conversation is super important. And I think coming back to Tom's point around culture, in any a transaction, whether you generally have an acquirer, acquiree, you're a joint venture partner, a merger, there's always a them and an us. And I think getting to the core of how you break down an M and us, bring teams together is, again, a critical point. That's probably the subject of an entirely different podcast that could probably take up an hour by itself.
No doubt it could. We're streamlining FP&A and integration. There'll be all sorts of issues in there. How do you go about that streamlining process? And Julie and Catherine, you've both been through this in different sizes of organizations. First of all, I'll start with you, Julia. What was that like in the O2 Virgin Media environment?
So streamlining FP&A seems like an obvious solution to enable some synergies, to remove some heads. After all, the team are doing the same work, so surely you'll need less people. But I think in reality for FP&A, it's very likely that in the short to medium term until the stabilization process and insight creation is there, that you actually might need more people to enable the required output for the business and owners. I think a lot of people forget that. What may be a more pragmatic path to immediate change is to think about the organization of the team, how to ensure there isn't duplication or even worse, gaps. And a great way to do this is to organize the combined teams around the activities that they're carrying out and have a clear race in place so that everyone is super clear on their purpose and the objective of what they're doing. And also ensuring that cross-training of tooling, processes, business context, drivers happens quickly for teams to understand how the other side of the merger or acquisition works and bring that one team alignment in place as quickly as you can.
Catherine, smaller organization, you were Depop going into Etsy. How did that work there?
Yeah, so in a smaller organization, you might also be creating FP&A from scratch, or building it up or evolving it to a new level of maturity, in which case it's really important to align with your strategy and the new organization structure. A few things that I think it's worth thinking about: alignment with the structure and partnering into different parts of the business, geographies, so how's your business structured, and making sure that you're aligned with the strategic importance of different markets or entities, thinking about functional expertise, consider having a dedicated person or champion for systems and consolidation. Make sure that you understand the parent company reporting and forecasting requirements and work with them to find a balance that makes sense. Imposing a very heavy requirement without having the infrastructure in place can really defeat the purpose. And sometimes it's so familiar to a large parent organization to have a routine process that seems fairly straightforward to them, but actually it might be putting quite a burden on a small subsidiary team. So talk to them, figure out what works. And the last thing that I would say is invest the time in building the profile of finance and helping your business stakeholders understand your vision and what it is that you can offer.
Now, what value can FP&A bring to the newly integrated organizations?
So much value, though I think we don't always seize that opportunity for a few reasons. But really, acquisitions or IPOs, any of these kind of events are the perfect time to capitalize on FP&A's potential. Of course, there are the added challenges of having to navigate multiple systems, even more data sources, and thinking about the combined business in a different way than before. But for those that can rise to that challenge, they can bring their existing understanding of business levers in one or more areas of the organization, and that balance of curiosity and discipline that's critical for the FP&A skill set, and help their stakeholders with things like continuing to monitor the underlying business and protect the core value, crafting the metrics and reporting needed to deliver the deal synergies, maybe identifying other opportunities that haven't been considered by the deal team, making a robust assessment of integration costs, supporting their stakeholders to understand their cost bases, which are likely to look very different to pre-deal, and helping them with key business decisions. They can help translate high-level strategic plans for the new business into detailed financial plans. So really, FP&A can be the glue that holds it all together, but they do need the input and engagement from stakeholders. So building trust in those early days, particularly with new stakeholders, is really important. Yeah, a really exciting time, but the journey should not be underestimated.
Indeed. Julie, you're now head of Finance Integration and Transformation Project Office. How are the challenges you've been facing in the past year or so different to the initial ones?
So I think I referenced at the initial integration, the focus was largely on how to get the numbers to shareholders and the business quicker. But the longer term, harder piece that we're now facing into is be able to answer the question, how do we make longer term changes that can really turn the dial, enable those synergies and improve the insight that we can give to the business and move us towards our future vision for finance? We're a couple of years on now. The integration is not complete. Our finance team members are, I think we could say, quite battle weary and change fatigued. So how do we onboard and bring them along the journey of the finance transformation that we're facing into? So the first stage is to have that clear vision of what we want finance for the organization to be. What is our North Star? for how we operate and design an end-state organisation of people, systems, process and the culture. But this needs to have senior leadership support and funding, and not just be a collection of fluffy buzzwords that you often see floated around as a vision. It's got to have clear, tangible outputs that the whole team can clearly understand and get behind to work towards. The next piece in that is the creation of a measurable sequence plan, focusing on the largest drivers of those change, ensuring that this takes into account the BAU requirements of the function as well. It's impossible to change everything at once, so this is very crucial. And the most important and often overlooked key puzzle piece is planning the change management journey for the team. The plans that you've made, carefully funded, carefully sequenced, are all going to fail, or things will be significantly harder if your wider team are not on the bus with you on that journey.
Tom, you've been promoted through a number of different roles since the merger. You're now Director of Finance Business Partnering in Liberty Shared Services. What are the benefits of mobility within the group?
Oh, absolutely. I think typically the temptation is to see a merger as a risk. Jobs are going to reduce, two roles into one, but actually it can be a big opportunity. As Julie mentioned, you know, new roles may well be created. People may choose to leave. So thanks, Ed, for that, because that opened up an opportunity for me. And actually, there can be huge benefits to build and maintain a bigger finance network, including the parent companies, which obviously is where I've ended up now. You've suddenly got a much larger company and scope for that network building. I guess I've always seen it as you've got to embrace change. I think that's the mindset that maybe comes from being on a finance graduate scheme way back when. I'm used to that kind of rotational nature and trying to push myself out of that comfort zone with a goal really to try and get as rounded a finance experience as possible. I think that can, you know, can be easy to say when, you know, you've got the fear of a mortgage or school fees to pay. I've always had the mindset of what's the worst that could happen out of putting yourself out there and trying to take an opportunity. And certainly a merger is an opportunity. It's not always a risk of losing a job. It opens up many more corridors. If I think about, you know, Virgin Media O2 now, there are finance functions within Virgin Media O2 that now exist that didn't as standalone companies, because the shareholders in Liberty Global or Telefonica did a lot of those services for us. So again, absolute evidence of new opportunities arising from a merger and two big companies coming together. Now, my one big takeaway to anyone is often as human beings, we're guilty of being modest and underplaying a little bit of, you know, what we've done in our careers, how we take our opportunities. And sometimes it's worth taking that step back and self-congratulating yourselves on things you've achieved. 12 years almost, I've, you know, gone from a graduate that didn't know their debits and credits to a director in one of the parent companies. And I think it's testament of the opportunities that can be there for an individual that's willing to put themselves out there, get out of the status quo a little bit and smell out the opportunities. They don't always drop into your lap. Timing can be rubbish, but ultimately take a punt, take a jump, and who knows where it might end up.
Yeah, I think it was around that PwC consulting becoming part of IBM. I remember somebody saying to me, a third of people will end up as losers, a third of people will end up as being winners, and a third of people it'll not make any difference at all to. But you've got to decide which third you're going to be in.
Yeah, exactly that. That's absolutely right.
And it is largely not what the company does. It's what you do to position yourself. Yeah. Chatting through about this has been absolutely fantastic. So I think just in summing this up, now thinking back to your own experiences, folks, if you're each going to give one key piece of advice to a finance director of a company about to make an acquisition, what would it be? Catherine?
I think I would go back to what I was talking about at the start. So having a clear strategy for integration and dedicated leadership. I think particularly if you're not operating at the scale of Virgin Media O2, you don't have a team already working on it pre-completion. I think the issue that many face is they've been so focused on getting the deal done. Perhaps they've never done an acquisition before and they don't think strategically about what the integration is going to look like and how it's going to happen.
And there must be that feeling when you've been working at that deal that you all suddenly draw a deep breath and think, oh, we've done it. And you take the ball completely and forget about this integration piece.
Yeah. I think, unfortunately, that happens rather a lot. And actually, you might have scaled that first mountain, but you've got the mountain range beyond still to conquer.
Ed, your thoughts?
For me, I'd probably reiterate a point Catherine made earlier, which is around when you get to the integration, go for speed. Don't leave people wallowing in uncertainty. That's a really damaging place to be. So speed.
Yeah. Julie?
And for me, it's be hyper aware that this isn't simple. Expect things to go long along the way, and it's a journey rather than a one-off quick change. Don't just focus on day one, month one, quarter one. Plan out further and have plans and funding in place to enable this. And ensure that the people managing this have the right skill sets and mindsets to bring the team on the integration journey. Take the time to plan out that change management journey.
I'd echo a lot of what Julie's saying, to be honest. I think step away from that output and task focus and really think about the mindset. Consider the how are we going to get there and the impact on the people rather than what do we need to deliver and when. And then sort of my other takeaway would be, I think we were very good at day one, initial crisis planning, making sure things don't fall over, and very good at what's the gold-plated end solution that we want to reach. Probably less good at what's that midterm interim solution process look like so that we're not in some kind of inefficient limbo state for 2 to 3 years. And I think that echoes Julie's point on not just focusing on day one, month end, et cetera, but actually that midterm planning is often forgotten in the midst of planning for day one and planning for that end state.
Gosh, we have covered such a lot of ground today, folks. Thank you hugely. Just to say, Julie, Ed, Tom, thank you for coming along and joining the Grow CFO show this week. And Catherine, thank you for bringing your previous team along to the Grow CFO show. So thank you all once again.
Thanks all. Thanks for joining.